I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miroboard. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miroboard?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Welcome to The Wagon Wheel. I'm Jared Kimber. This is the podcast where we answer your questions. Best place to get them in is patreon.com/Jared Kimber. And you can also do that by Super Chats, which a couple of people already have today. We're packing them in today. I've got this show, then I've got Scoreboard straight after. So Super Chats are probably your best chance of getting a question answered if you are live on the YouTube. But who knows? Who knows what will take my fancy? Who knows why I said the phrase, take my fancy? Let's start with the Patreon questions, though. Like this one from Bloody, who says, my friend is a batter and as such is a typical chauvinist member of the batrarchy. I love this and maybe using that all the way through from here on in. He proposes that bouncers should be eliminated or at maximum one per over, justification being safety. Bouncers don't take skill as it is not directly taking a wicket, intimidation, etc. Please explain why this is a terrible proposal. I haven't been able to convince him so far. Well, bouncers do take skill. You know, I think we probably always thought that anyone could bowl a bouncer. And I think Neil Wagner has taught us that there's bouncers and there's bouncers. You know, the old Andy Roberts, Courtney Walsh style bouncers as well, certainly on a different level. That ability also of the great West Indian bowlers not to bowl bouncers, but to bowl the ball at your chest and still have it in an area where you feel uncomfortable without it being called a bouncer. So I think there's a lot of skill in bouncers, trying to work out where you need to land the ball on particular pitches and, you know, all those sorts of things certainly play a part. It is a wicket-taking ball. It's a very high wicket-taking ball. Intimidation, obviously, is a part of it, and that's why it exists. But I would say the majority of the wickets these days are probably more from people trying to score off a ball that is dangerous to score off. So from that point of view, Batting averages would just balloon if you took bouncers away. You know, the best way of looking at this is 1930s is kind of where Hammond, Headley, Bradman, Sutcliffe, all those guys, you know, come on the back of Hobbs and they work out batting accumulation. You couldn't really stop them. The two ways of stopping Hammond and Bradman outside of wickets was literally bowling short and fast at them, because that is a different style of batting again. And you talk to, you know, you talk to a lot of players and it, you know, it requires a different sense of bravery. It requires a different technician. It's a completely different game. Cricket would be a lot more one-dimensional without it. I can't see how we would ever do it. The safety element is right, of course. How do we continue to make cricket safer? Will we ever get to a point where the bounce is not allowed just because, you know, the insurance is an issue? All these sorts of things could play a part. Nadika says, which team has been the bigger underachievers in terms of winning major trophies across formats? This generation of India or the Sri Lankan side of late 2000s, early 2010? I would probably say it's still India, just because their reign is maybe a little bit longer. So what are we talking about now? 2014 to 2023. So, you know, that's a good 9 years. The Sri Lankan one is what, 2007, and then they win in 2014. So it's a shorter reign and they have that major win in that window. So yeah, I would say that it's probably them. That Sri Lankan team, I will go back, and we might even be able to do it in this World Cup, but I'd love to go back and just show how brilliant they were and how ridiculous it was that they didn't win as much. You know, second World Cup, they probably should have, you know, they got Afridi, T20 World Cup I'm talking about here. 2007, they ran into arguably the best team we've ever had at a World Cup. So they ran into maybe the best T20 player at the early part of cricket and then the best team. 2011, they run into India in India. Again, pretty strong team. 2012, running into the West Indies, coming good. And, you know, who knows what happened in 2014 if the West Indies had got their act together in that tournament as well. So, yeah, I think they were probably also unlucky to come against so many great teams. But over a long period of time, it's a ridiculous team. I will do a video on this because I do love talking about that era, and I don't think it gets as much respect as it could. I think it's one reason people like me were so excited when they won in 2014, because we'd been living that. So I think for other fans, they hadn't really noticed, and it was probably because they hadn't won. Patrick says, what current test opener is the best player of swing? So Patrick, I don't know if you know, we did a video a while back, which I think it was me and Sean worked on it. And the whole video was on who is the best opener in test match cricket at the moment. It's not particularly an easy question to answer because there really aren't that many players at the moment that you would say are killing it as opening batters. If you're asking me, I would probably have Khawaja at the top of that list at the moment. Who's second though? It's not ideal, is it? It's not really Crawley or Duckett. Brathwaite maybe. I mean, I don't think Brathwaite's a bad player of the moving ball. His problems usually come later in his innings. Perhaps I would go there, but I think my hesitation tells you that we don't have a lot of players now. There isn't a lot of swinging ball anymore. So usually now you have to go up against the wobble ball, which is obviously slightly different. So maybe Dean Elgar was the best player of the swing ball before he retired, and the wobble ball probably eventually got to him. Swing ball isn't what it used to be. So if you are specifically talking about swing ball, I don't think that's as much of an issue. But if you're talking about lateral movement in general, then Khawaja would probably be the best one, I would think. And I don't think that's like Khawaja's main strength. It's just that there aren't that many other players out there. You know, Latham and Karuna Ratna, you know, really good openers. Rohit can play it quite well at times, but I don't think there's anyone obvious in a way, maybe like of what, 7 or 8 years ago when you had Cook and when did Cook retire? Yeah, I think that's right. 7 or 8 years ago when you had Cook and Elgar, I think they were pretty obvious at that stage. I'm not sure that we have those sorts of players around at the moment. Maybe Chris Rogers as well, a little bit before them. Addy says, as a watcher of multiple sports, I still can't get over the fact that the Cricket World Cup teams are not seeded and the groups are randomly picked and the groups aren't randomly picked in a live event. Ignoring the India versus Pakistan, England, Australia, do you know if there are any rhyme or reason to how the groups are selected, like team rankings or continent? Oh, I haven't checked on this tournament, actually, Addy, sorry. In other times, they quite often take the rankings into account. And they try and do that. But obviously, they gerrymander all their rankings anyway to make sure that they won. So it's the reason that someone like me is not all that interested in that system is because we know that they're just doing it to get the teams in the way they want. It's ridiculous. It's borderline corruption that they are fixing the event. It really annoys me that it just keeps happening. And it's probably never going to stop. Ruja said, I saw the India versus Bangladesh warm-up game live, and I didn't think India's batting fired on all cylinders. but they still posted 180. The pitch might have been a bit slow, lots of pulls in front of square, but Bangladesh never got anywhere near it. Given how well USA and Canada batted in Dallas and not New York, so different conditions, could Bangladesh have the worst batting in this competition? Very unfair on you, Rudra. I reckon you sent this message before Uganda played. look, no, Bangladesh have better batting than Canada. Bangladesh have better batting than Uganda. They have better batting than PNG. Nepal, I'm not a Nepal expert, but I would say that they've got better batting than Nepal as well. So it's not a great batting lineup, and it's probably the worst batting lineup of the Test Nations by a distance. Certainly a lot worse than Ireland. I'm trying to think of, well, Zimbabwe aren't here. But yeah, so no, I do think that they're pretty poor. But no, I think Canada had a great batting wicket, and they still didn't make as many runs as they probably could have. The thing is, you watch one game and you make a huge assumption here. Nicholas Curtin, let's have a look at Nicholas Curtin's overall record in T20 cricket. Remember, he made 50 off 30 in that game. And I think he's a very talented player and can, you know, he's hopefully just hitting his peak. But coming into that game, coming into that game, he had 290 T20 runs. And I think he was averaging around 21 or 22 with a strike rate of 115. Like, he's not getting a game for Bangladesh, and he's probably, you know, one of the two best players in the, he might be the best batter in the Canadian lineup, right? And yeah, I'm hoping that he develops and becomes the player that I thought he could be when he was quite young. And he certainly looked pretty good the other night. But there's a big difference between that and, you know, the someone like Najmal Shanto, who has proven himself at the international level many times, and Ridoy, who can hit with power, and some of the other players. So, I see what you're making, but certainly not Canada. America's an interesting one because America beat Bangladesh recently, and I did think the batting was a part of that. But then you had that game where Mustafiza bowled well. I think America's a very good flat pitch batting team, which is interesting because they don't play on a lot of flat pitches in America, but I think they're a very good flat pitch batting team. On a tricky wicket, I wonder if Bangladesh is still not a slightly better team. Satchmo, which decade would produce the strongest World Test 11? The 90s had Lara Tendulkar, Warne, Murali, Ambrose, but the 80s had great all-rounders plus Richards, Border, Garner, Marshall. I know, what would the 2010s and 2020s have as well? That's a fascinating question. 80s, 90s, 2000s. You still get Warne and McGrath in the 2000s, don't you? And you get Steyn. Who's your fourth bowler? I'm probably missing someone really obvious. Plus you get Callis. So that's a pretty good all-round side again. 2010 to 2020, you get some. Yeah, I don't know. That might be one, Satchmo, for a video one day. It's a very, we'd almost, might be a Crick Picks. We might have to draft a bunch of teams from each era and then put them all together for a major video to try and see which one is the best. Because that is not an easy decision to make just off the top of my head. Great question. Ali says, I just saw your earlier T20 MVP videos. I wanted to ask you how you calculate true averages and true strike rate. I'm trying to calculate them for my local league. Varun is usually in the comments here, Ali, so he might be the best person to talk about. But essentially what we're looking at is we know what the expected outcome of each ball is because those balls have been bowled many, many times before. So in the 35th over, the third ball in your local league might have a strike rate of 0.6, right? So if someone makes one run, they are 0.4 over that. And so they are plus 0.4 for that particular ball. And of course, the next ball, if they have a dot ball, they come back down again, right? And that's kind of, and then they would be let's say the next ball is 0.6 again. They would then be minus 0.2. After those two balls. That's how you do true strike rate. True average, we're looking at when they came in, what was the expected runs of a player in that position. So if you come in at 12 for 4, your expected runs is probably like 18, 16, 14, I don't know, in club cricket. What did they go above that? And then you have to factor in ground sizes as well. Not ground sizes, sorry, ground conditions. So if you're playing on turf, less so if you're playing on synthetic, but if you're playing on turf, you know, there are going to be wickets where you're going to get regular low scores and everything else. That's the very basic gist of how we put all those numbers together. But Varun, if he is in the comments, is the man to talk to about all that sort of stuff. Ali again says, in US, Willow TV is broadcasting this World Cup as opposed to ESPN, like in the past. Isn't that a bad strategy from ICC's perspective to have an obscure broadcaster in the US as opposed to ESPN, the American sports channel? It seems so bizarre to change it specifically for the supposed home World Cup. Yeah, I mean, USA legacy media is hardly covering anything at all. I think ESPN's actually done quite a bit. Like, I'm just looking at TikTok. I keep getting ESPN videos on TikTok of, you know, interviewing people. I saw Rohit Sharma with the Larry O'Brien Trophy. Is it Graham Bessinger? I think his name interviewed Virat Kohli. I've seen a couple of things on Virat Kohli as well. So there has been some stuff in the legacy media, but you're right. Like, what is the point of having a World Cup? And I'd like the people at Willow TV and, you know, obviously, you know, I know that I've met the owners a couple of times and seem like great guys. And obviously their part in Major League Cricket is really important for the US. But I would have given this tournament to Willow TV and ESPN for free, right? I want every single American to have access to this. All the people who have supported American cricket before through Willow, great. There you go. ESPN through Crick Info has done a lot for USA cricket, but also who cares if they have or not? Get it to as many people as possible. What kind of money are they making off Willow that this is worth it? I think there are too many decisions made at the ICC about them trying to maximize the revenue at any single moment and not actually play the long game, because that is what they are judged on. That's not what they should be judged on. They should be judged on, is cricket bigger than it used to be? Did this tournament succeed? And, you know, doing mistakes like that, for me, just don't seem right. Ben says, if England, Australia and India are allowed to enter B teams into the World Cup, where would you predict they'd come? I suspect they wouldn't beat South Africa or New Zealand, but they would beat Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, West Indies. Well, West Indies are currently like fourth favourite for the tournament, Ben. I think West Indies are currently shorter than South Africa or New Zealand, unless the odds have changed recently. Certainly they're shorter than New Zealand. Sri Lanka are, well, I backed them at 80-1 after the game yesterday, but I think they're 90-1 on some markets now, and 100-1 probably as well. I think a lot of teams in the world would struggle with Sri Lanka's bowling a lineup, but clearly Sri Lanka on the other side of the ball is an issue. Yeah, I mean, South Africa is a genuine chance to win this tournament. It's really hard to answer that question because I would have to go through who the B teams are. And if you generally, when you go through B teams, so for instance, who would be India's bowler in seam bowlers in a B team, right? Like, who are the guys that you would give the ball to? Sandeep Sharma, perhaps? I'm missing some other obvious guys here. Because Ashdeep's in the main squad, and you can't pick players in the main squad, right? I do think there is an element of, and that's usually where these teams come apart, is the bowlers. Almost specifically in most countries, it seems to be the seam bowlers that are the issue. But, you know, who are Australia's backup spinners who can do have a genuine impact on, against good sides, right? Against Sri Lanka and against, I mean, Bangladesh is different because I don't rate them particularly highly at all in T20 cricket, but, you know, against the better sides, you know, even against Ireland, right? So I'm not sure it's quite as simple as that, but I think those teams could put up good sides. Oh, actually, before I get to this question, let's have a quick break here on a Wagon Wheel with Jared Gimber, and we'll be back in a few moments with more of your questions. Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are analysing every part of our game. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is really happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket8.com is your place for cricket intelligence.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at weeks 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of 1. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Ben says, if the criteria to be retired for England is not going to play in Australia, although still in their best team at home, and getting on a bit. Was Wokes already retired by Bass in the management? Appreciate he's taking a break currently. I don't know. Wokes is... and I say this as someone who I think has done a video on this before. He still should work in outside of England, right? It just doesn't. And I don't really know what to say about that. I kind of feel that McCullum would see that as another challenge of like, I'm going to be the guy to unlock Wokes, right? But yeah, I don't know if Wokes is in their plan. I don't know if anyone does at the moment, just because obviously, you know, we now found out he's had some personal reasons that he's been away for a long time. And, you know, all thoughts go to him and his family, you know, during that time. So I don't know if Wokes is in their plans or, you know, if they have any plans when it comes to that. So I'd be very fascinated to see if that is something that that happens. And I'm also very fascinated to see how McCullum tries to get the most out of it, or Stokes. Rudra says, what are the West Indies chances against Afghanistan and New Zealand, given that they almost lost to Papua New Guinea, and why does that group look so weak overall? Well, they're as I said before, they're like the third or fourth favourite for this tournament, everyone. There's a lot of people who really believe in them. I think I probably always thought they had a bit of an issue. I think part of the reason they played against the Papua New Guinea the way they did is because they allowed that game to go in that direction, which they probably wouldn't do against a better opposition. So I'm not saying it's a throwaway game, but maybe it's a good game to get under your belt early on so that you're not as worried. But let's move that to the side for a moment. Afghanistan are probably going to struggle to take enough runs, and they need wickets from their seamers against the West Indies, would be my guess. If they can get wickets from their seamers, I think they can certainly beat the West Indies. New Zealand game could go either way, if we're being honest. I think all three of those sides have strengths and weaknesses. I don't look at any of those three sides as a legitimate winner. And I don't look at any of those sides as a side I'm massively confident of making the semifinals. But I do think that West Indies and New Zealand have the, you know, have the ability to make it. But I think I don't think they're in the best four sides in this tournament for me. I think it probably says something that, like, even a team like Sri Lanka, even with their problems with their batting, at least I feel like they're very good at one particular thing, and that can go through. So, yes, you know, it is possible that the West Indies couldn't go through, but I don't see that as being likely. Which uncapped in Test cricket do you think are most likely to feature in the next Ashes series? I suppose it'll be an England wicketkeeper, won't it? Smith, who they're obsessed with about four different younger wiki keepers at the moment. So that would be one. I probably would have said Bryden Cass. I don't know if he counts as young. Was he 28, 29? He hasn't played a test match yet. So he would probably be another one. So there's a couple from England. I'm missing any other batters. I mean, you would think, I would think that's the main lot. And would, I'm trying to think if they'd be looking at another potential number three, depending on how Pope goes from here and Ed. But he'll probably make runs this summer and maybe that won't be as big an issue. And from Australia, I suppose Spencer Johnson is a possibility depending on Mitchell Starc's fitness and form. But Spencer Johnson's virtually never played first-class cricket, and I'm not sure they'll take a punt on him. I suppose you would almost maybe throw Xavier Bartlett in a similar one there. Riley Meredith maybe as well, as far as fast bowlers go. Don't think they're going to make any big changes with their wicket keepers. And then I'm missing something really obvious here. Oh, yeah, and then I suppose, is there a chance that I would assume Smith and Khawaja are still playing, but is there a chance that one of Smith or Khawaja retires before then? I think that's the only guys I'm thinking of, right? And that there's a couple of changes around the order. Would Travis Head potentially go up the order? I don't think he opens though, does he? But is there a possibility that Travis Head goes up the order, which allows Mitchell Marsh maybe to bat at five and they try Aaron Hardy? I don't know. He doesn't fit perfectly well in this team with Mitch Marsh and Cameron Green there. So maybe they don't need to. But I don't think there's any other uncapped test batters, first class batters in Shield cricket that are going to force their way into that. Unless there is a couple of retirements or injuries. And of course, then things change quite drastically. John says, what is the importance of revolutions versus seam position for turn, specifically in a spin ball? What is the importance of revolutions versus seam position? Well, spin comes from the revolution, right? So the amount of revolutions you get on the ball impacts the amount of spin. Why you sometimes get sharp spinning balls and you sometimes get balls who spin slower and sometimes balls that even skid on is because of where the ball lands. And so we were always taught traditionally to make sure that the ball always landed on the seam because you get the most amount of spin. And you go back to the old coaching manuals, that's what it says. You know, you basically want to spin the ball over that way so that when it lands, it hits the seam and it spins off. And then I first noticed it with Shahid Afridi that sometimes he would hold the ball a little bit mixed. And so I would hold some balls like that and then some balls like that on purpose so that I would hopefully get it to hit the shiny side. And then Rashid Khan comes in and he shows us that actually the best thing is to mix the seam up completely. So you as the bowler don't even know what the ball is going to do, which is very similar to what the wobble ball is, right? Why give the batter any extra clues that you don't need to give them? So I think those things all matter. But if you're bowling spin and you're putting lots of revolutions on the ball, you want the ball to sometimes hit the shiny side, sometimes hit the rough side, sometimes hit the seam. Because if the ball always looks like it's going to spin and it doesn't always spin, that is much harder than the other art, which is trying to deceive someone with a ball that looks like it's going to spin but won't, right? So if you think of, you know, the ball that doesn't really exist anymore, although Akhil Hasan has a version of this, but generally in cricket now, the ball that doesn't exist all that much anymore is the arm ball from a finger spinner. And the reason that that doesn't exist all that much is modern batters are pretty good at noticing when you're not putting side revolutions on the ball, right? And so what's better than that is someone like Ashwin bowling with a mixed seam and bowling one ball that will spin back in and with the exact same action, with the exact same amount of revolutions, bowling another one that might skid on. That's way better than an arm ball, right? And it still is technically an arm ball, but you're not really bowling for the arm ball because you don't even know if that is going to be happening at that point. The problem with everything I've just said, John, is actually drift. So revolutions play a big part in drift, but if the seam is in the right position, you can also sort of I don't know, there's probably a better scientific, but catch it on the wind. So especially in places like England and New Zealand where the ball does swing more than in other places, if you can keep the seam nice and straight, you know, even if it's on an angle, and it goes down, I'm trying to get it right on the video. This is absolutely useless. So I just realized for anyone listening on the podcast, but if you're trying to get it on like a diagonal angle, as it is turning in the air, there is more chance of the ball drifting. So I wouldn't say a ball drifting, like all balls that have side spin on them are going to drift, right? That's a natural thing, but that's a natural amount of drift. And then when I would say a ball has drifted, it's more like when Mo and Ali gets the seam right and it actually swings away and then spins back. Sort of Tim May was, you know, a master of that kind of delivery, which is why, you know, he was quite often looked better than he was, if that, and why people always thought he was so good, because you had to worry about that kind of delivery. So the seam position does play a part, but the revolutions is obviously a lot more important. I hope that's answered your question, John. James says, England famously selected several players from South Africa and Zimbabwe in the 70s through the 90s. Have you heard of any of them saying that they had wished they waited for their birth country's readmission instead? No, I don't think so. I think you have to understand that most of those players made a lot more money than they would have if they had stayed home, even if they played. So let's say Graham Hick. If Graham Hick now lives, well, on the Gold Coast in Australia, in what I assume is a lovely house, right? Paid for by being paid an absolute fortune by Worcester for a long period of time, right? If he plays for Zimbabwe, even if he averages, well, let's say he was successful for Zimbabwe in a way he wasn't for England, and he averages, I don't know, 45, and has a really long career and is really respected, at the end of that, he's still going to have to go and get a real job, right? Or he's going to have to have made a lot of his money playing county cricket when he was available, because playing for cricket for Zimbabwe isn't going to pay you any money. So there are probably some of those guys who wish they played more international cricket, or someone like Alan Lamb. Although maybe Alan Lamb's a bad example. I'm trying to think of someone, a South African in the 90s. Robin Smith. Is Robin Smith a better version? Because he's a bit later, isn't he? Robin Smith, he makes his debut in 1988. Yeah, so Robin Smith is probably a slightly better example because he's a little bit later. Again, was able to retire to, I think he retired to Perth, right? I'm assuming he did pretty well financially out of county cricket. I'm not saying he hasn't struggled since, because we all know he's had his own issues on and off the field. But there's a really good book by Rob Smythe about all this as well. I'm sure he would have got a bit more satisfaction out of having played for South Africa than he did out of playing for England. Having said that, he wouldn't be in the same position in his life professionally. So, you know, I suppose the perfect version of this is Kepler Wessels, right? But Kepler Wessels went to Australia, and you don't make a lot of money playing as a professional cricketer in Australia in the 80s. And so going back to South Africa in the 90s wasn't a big difference. Whereas, you know, some of those guys, you know, Alan Lamb and Robin Smith and all those sorts of players would have had, cars as part of their sponsorship deals. They probably would have got other things like watches. They also, because they played county cricket, they have the ability to go on the after dinner circuit, which is, a really lucrative one. International cricket is even more so. You know, a lot of my friends who are former international cricketers from England, they make their money during the test years, during the test season, going to the first two or three days and just sitting in corporate boxes and telling stories, right? That is a lot harder to do if you're a South African cricketer than if you're an English cricketer. So all those things eventually come up. That's not to say that those guys wouldn't have, in a perfect world, loved to have played for South Africa or Zimbabwe. But financially and for their family's good, I think a lot of them would say, what's the best option here? And we're still seeing South African and Zimbabwean players making that call. James says, at what point does the ICC intervene in the operations of an incompetent national board? PDB's posts about USA cricket read like the script for a slapstick sitcom, and yet they are hosting a World Cup. I'm going to be really, really honest here. I think the ICC, knowing how bad it was before they started this process, I think USA cricket would have been kicked out. I would not surprise me at all if after this World Cup, they are suspended again. They've already been suspended at least once by the ICC, off the top of my head, maybe twice. And so I don't, I honestly believe that they didn't really realize how bad it was. Now, they have no excuse for that because the former ICC lawyer, Ian Anderson, I think that's his name, was the CEO of USA Cricket. And I, you know, that was probably a couple of revolutions back. I don't know how many CEOs they've had since then. But they should have known how bad this was. I think they thought they could come in and sort it out. And then they got there and realized it was way worse than they thought it would. Also, I think there's an element of generally, I think the issues within USA are generally people sticking around to get things for themselves. You know, get a tournament for their friend sanctioned, or get their nephew into an underage team or whatever it may be, right? There's a real, and I don't just mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a, it is really more of a unprofessional kind of setup. And I think what happened this time is a lot of those people who would phase would have naturally phased out stuck around because of the India-Pakistan game, right? And how important that was. That, you know, there, I know there are people who have said that, have told me privately that it's important to their business, that game, right? The relationships that they can do, the people that they can bring over for that game, all these sorts of different things. It's really, really huge. And I think it's probably made USA Cricket a worse organization because a lot of people have stuck around for the wrong reasons. And then it was already poorly run. It's already got masses and masses of issues, which PDP, me and PDP have probably done videos on this before on Red Inker, and PDP has written 100,000 articles about this. It's really a comically badly run cricket board. And I'm not sure during my covering of cricket if it ever has not been. Like, I can't think of a time when it was run well. I think there were times when it had good intentions, but was still run poorly. It's been really bad all the way through my professional cricket writing career. And sadly, that doesn't seem to have gone away. Anyway, we'll take a quick break here. This is brought to you by CricketAid. Cricket intelligence for you every day.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Josh says, venues, which 5 test venues would you pick for an all-time ultimate test series? Oh, I like this. Criteria, iconicness. Ah, see, I would have picked the best wickets. Now you've completely ruined it. Iconicness and variety. I wouldn't pick Lords. MCG, Eden Gardens. Yes, yes. Goal. I like Goal. Basin. Would you throw Cape Town in there, maybe? Barbados. is another one. I'm trying to think of some other great ones from around the world. I think the Gabba probably has a... Australia dominated there for so long, but I actually think the Gabba is a brilliant cricket wicket. Although it's a bit of a shit ground, isn't it? I'm trying to think of any other. I mean, I'd probably go the Wacker or Joburg just because I like, you know, those wickets with the pace and bounce. Trying to think of another really cool wicket that I always enjoy watching games from. Yeah, I think that's the majority of them off the top of my head. So your list is pretty good. I'm not sure if I'd have Wankhede. I mean, I like Wankhede as a ground, but I'm not sure. It's kind of automatic on this list. Kind of feel Chennai because of the tide test. And, you know, I don't know. There's something about Chennai that always brings me back a little bit. I love Trent Bridge just as a, you know, as a random ground. So I might have Trent Bridge on my list, which I'm sure a lot of other people wouldn't. So I would probably pick from those. And apparently I can't pick five. Josh says, umpires, which two on-field umpires would you pick for an all-time ultimate test series? It's hard to go past the sort of, you know, the current day umpires because they're just so much better than everyone else. It's not that, it's not particularly, what's the best way of putting it? It's not that they are better than the old-fashioned umpires. It's that we have trained them how to give better decisions than the old-fashioned umpires. Look, I'm a big fan of... I think the two best umpires in the world are probably Michael Goff and Nitin Menon. All things considered, I haven't looked at the stats, so they would be the two that I would certainly have on my list. I really liked Murray Erasmus. I thought he was a fantastic umpire as well. I'm not as big on the kind of celebrity umpires, you know, Rudy and Buckner and you know, Dickie and Shep and all those guys. You know, I've been lucky enough to spend some time with Dickie Bird, you know, and I enjoy him. But as an umpire, I'm not a big fan of becoming the story. Torfel's probably the best umpire I've seen. And I think that one of the reasons umpiring is so much better is because of Simon Torfel. So maybe him and Erasmus would be in that group that I had with Nitin Menon and Goff. But those are the ones off the top of my head that are, you know, certainly my ultimate. So what is that? That gives me four umpires. I've given you four umpires. Although I would then need an umpire who I would trust as the third umpire. And I'm not sure which one of those it is. William says, what, if anything, changed in Zach Crawley's technique that led to his improvement in form last year? So if you look at Zach Crawley... overall, he's got I think in the last 2 years in Test cricket, he's still averaging quite low, right? So it's not as if he suddenly started averaging 50. Let's have a look at by year of him here. In 2022, he was still averaging 30, and it's gone up to 43 last year and 40 this year. I think those are all within the, you know, how old is he now? 26. Okay, that's not too bad. But those are all within the levels of which I would assume we thought he could improve to. Whether he can continue to go up to that next level is the interesting one. I think with him, it's probably also very much to do with the pitches. And I think he really has put some pressure back onto people in that no one is quite sure that they want to sort of bowl to him in a certain way. So They don't want to get punished by him, and they don't want him and Ducker. And so that sort of, that combination. The other thing I would say is because of the amount of pressure he puts back on very, very early on, he hasn't got a lot of not outs. So if you go through his entire career, wonder if I can bring up the entire thing here. If you go through his entire career, he has a normal pattern of an opening batter, which is, you know, 40, 9, 13, 5, 69, 100, 50, 19, 3, duck, right? If you go to recently, he made a duck in his last game at Durham. Before that, he'd gone about 12 or 13 games in a row without a single figure score. Of those, he only made 100. It would be very, very hard for him to be able to keep up that kind of pattern. Does this mean, though, that he's discovered how to put a little bit of pressure back on the bowlers early on, get himself some cheap runs in a sort of Justin Langer kind of way? I know he's a different kind of player than Justin Langer, but in that kind of Justin Langer kind of way, then he can ease back into his innings, but he's still having the same basic problems that I've always talked about overall, which is I don't think he's a very good run scorer. I think he's a very good sort of automaton batter. And those sorts of guys quite often don't make as many hundreds, which ends up impacting their overall scores when they do go through a run. So he's averaging, what did I say, 41 since the start of 2023, right? And with that, that is with 100. So he's still got the same technical problem with his bottom hand. He's still got the same backlift problem when it comes to left arm finger spinners or probably wrist spinners if he faced too many of those as well. That hasn't gone away, I don't think. What he's got better at, though, is just getting into his innings, which is a really, really important thing. But that other thing that I've always seen as his biggest issue, which he might just solve when he gets to 28, 29 anyway, is he still, to me, doesn't look like a person who understands how to actually build an innings. He knows how to hit balls that are in front of him. And that ability to learn how to build an innings, I think, you know, there's a great conversation between Steve Smith and Michael Clark about this years ago that they had. And, you know, Michael Clark was trying to explain that, and this sounds like a really, really simple thing, but not to celebrate his 100 too much, because actually the thing you should be celebrating is 150. At the moment, Zach Crawley is being celebrated for, let's have a look at some of these. I'm trying to find some of the good ones he did. Versus Australia, what was that? 73 of 76, right? 31 of 33. You know, these kinds of innings, he's being celebrated for that. Actually, at a certain point, if he's going to develop, England needs to change their mind on him a little bit and go, no. When you started, it was great to be able to bat like this. Now we need a proper opener who can actually go in and make big scores. They may not feel that way, especially when Brendan McCullum's around, but that is the development that he needs to make. So his two technical flaws are still there. I think he's become a better starter just because he's putting so much pressure on the bowlers at the moment. And he still has that other, I don't know if it's a mental weakness, but an innings building weakness, I suppose, that hasn't gone away. So, you know, there are great signs there, but there are still issues within his batting. Thomas says, hope you had a nice holiday. I did. You mentioned that the BBL in going from 6 to 8 teams weakened itself. I appreciate that with limited supplies of players, an increase in teams will dilute the player base. However, do we have any measure of how a weaker competition is for an increase in teams? No, not really. I mean, I think over time, you weaken it instantly, right? And you start having guys who were club cricketers like Craig Simmons and Evan Gulbis and I forget, there was a guy in, a really good player in Sydney as well, you know, who had to come into sides, right? Who everyone thought were good cricketers, but they had to step up to that next level. You know, and at times they did, and eventually probably most of them had the sort of careers you would expect of someone at that level. But what that also does is it does allow for more of your players to be professional and be in the setup. And it's harder for you to miss talent when you have that. So it weakens the overall competition, but it can actually be still of benefit for you. The tipping point, of course, is when you get to 18 teams like in England and you start getting players who are never going to average over 35 in first-class cricket as a batter, who are maybe can average 27 in ODI cricket, but give it a whack occasionally, are good fielders or whatever. And they're probably, you know, they're not really improving the overall quality of the players that you want to get better as test potential players or T20 potential players or whatever. And so that's where that there's kind of like a juxtaposition there of that sort of thing. You're much better off to probably have 6 to 8 teams in your first division that is really, really, really strong. And then 6 to 8 teams in your second division and 6 to 8 teams in your third division. And England hasn't quite got there, but is obviously trying to do something like that. That means that you still have players coming through and then hopefully you're hoping that your next prospects filter in to the sides who are going to be in the first division and be in that kind of situation. So there's benefits to both systems. How much weaker, Thomas, is really, really hard to be able to quantify because, you know, a lot of us analysts, we can kind of tell you when a league has got weaker. So the best case of that was when there was a bunch of players who I think were good players who maybe had bottom end international quality talents to them. So I had Shivam Dubey as someone like that, Deepak Hooda, Rahul Tripathi, and there's a couple of others, right? And I thought that when the IPL added the extra sides, a lot of those players suddenly had better seasons. And it's because they were facing a couple of extra weaker bowlers per game than they might have been before, right? But on the same side, look at what Shivam Dubey has actually transformed himself into, right? And maybe that doesn't happen as easily when there's more pressure on him for his spot with other players. So it's weaker, but it also can help. So it's a bit of a weird one, the way all that works. Let me get to the super chats. I probably won't get chances for anything else today just because of the scoreboard that we need to do in a moment and my ridiculous schedule today. There's two games as well. There's a lot going on. Specky94 says, how volatile is T20? What percentage of games does the better team win in T20, ODI and test? This is really rough, but my mark is that the best teams at T20 win about 66% of the time. This is over like a 2 or 3 year period. The best teams in ODI cricket can win up around 75% of the time. And the best teams in test cricket, if you take away draws, which is, you know, these days we kind of have, is probably closer to 80%. And if you look at the most wins in a row of major teams in T20, so there's a couple of smaller teams. I think Bermuda won 13 in a row once. But if you come down, India's won the most T20s in a row, which is 12. And I don't think there is another team even all that close to them. Pakistan won 9 in a row, and that was partly playing Zimbabwe, if I remember correctly. That one, and then India's got another one of 9, and then you've got New Zealand and 9, Pakistan. So you can see here from an international perspective, it doesn't happen all that often. If you go to most wins for ODI cricket, Australia's won 21 in a row. Let's throw that away because that was ridiculous. Sri Lanka won 13 in a row, but again, that was against a couple of poorer sides. South Africa won 12 in a row, a couple of games against Zimbabwe in there, but not terrible. Pakistan have won 12 in a row. Again, a lot of Zimbabwe. South Africa won 12 in a row against Australia and South Africa and Sri Lanka and New Zealand. So you can see there's a few teams here on 12 and 11. So you can already see that there's a bit of a bump up there. Test cricket's a little bit different because of the draws. And so it's a little bit harder to do. But you can see more consistency in good teams winning, you know, over a period of time. Or not losing, maybe, is the best way of looking at it. Specky, in that way. So, yeah, I think that gives you a pretty good idea of the difference there. But those would be my general numbers off the top of my head. Rupesh says, do you think AI will reduce the need of analysts and is a threat to their jobs? Do you use AI for your work? We don't use it a lot at the moment. We will probably use it more and more. Look, I think it's another tool for an analyst. There's so many parts of being an analyst. If you're just crunching numbers, then perhaps AI is going to be a bit of an issue for you going forward. But I don't just crunch numbers, right? There are many different things that I particularly do as an analyst. And if I was in charge of a team, analysis side, the numbers are just one small section. Like, I don't think AI can help you particularly with training. I mean, it can, but what I mean is watching training, you know, coming up with new methods and everything else, AI is probably not going to be all that helpful with it. I think AI would just be another tool, in the same way that analysis is another tool. So I don't have any issue, with AI at all. A lot of our jobs are going to be automated, but what we put in, if you go to the Betfair exchanges, a lot of the money that is moving in all those different directions is from algorithms. Right? Most of those algorithms, if not all those algorithms, have a person in them trading on them, tweaking them based on what they can see. An AI model can tell you a lot of things, but at the moment, it can't tell you if that last ball swung or if that last ball kept low. Now, eventually, it might be able to tell you that sort of stuff, but it can't tell you how well the batter played it as well, especially if they've left it, right? It's little things like that update those models and help AI and, you know, help algorithms are going to be around for a long time. AJ, who says, where does Steyn rank all time? Superb in a good batting era. How valuable would Senath and Yuvi be in a T20 franchise? Yuvi top wicket taker in 2011. Yeah, Yuvi had some really good years with the ball in T20 cricket. Steyn all time, I think he's in certainly within an argument of the top 10. I don't know if he gets in the top 5, but your point about good batting era might be what pushes him over the line. I think he's very, very close, but certainly has to be a top 10 candidate without any doubt. And then you're probably looking at top 5 candidates. I think what you probably still would prefer McGrath or Ambrose. I'm missing someone obvious here that I was about to say. Marshall and Garner. So is he in that sort of Lily Hadley area? Lily Hadley, kind of cluster, Anderson kind of cluster. And he might be at the top of that cluster, right? Depending on how you look at it and everything else. Maybe him and Hadley are fighting to be in the top 5. I have Garner a lot higher than a lot of other people, so you know, that might be on me. But I think certainly Kirtley, McGrath, Marshall, and depends on when, if you want to put Sid Barnes in all this as well, probably have Steyn slightly covered. But I mean, if you did a number, maybe I'm wrong and he is up on that level. I'd have to go all the way through it. Roger says, if you have to create a lineup only from players in this World Cup to bat on that New York pitch from yesterday, who would your top 6 be? Virat, Williamson, Rohit. Bairstow? I might throw Bairstow in there. Don't know why my voice went that high for Bairstow, but also think perhaps I was right to do so. Puran? I might go Klaassen as well. Trying to think of some other players. Yeah, I think Klaassen's a possibility. Is there anyone else from India? Baba and Rizwan would be two others, I would think. I mean, you need proper batting skills on that wicket, right? You probably don't want hitters, unless you want someone like Klaassen who can probably hit, or Puran, although I both think they both have proper batting skills. But I want them specifically for the abilities to hit sixes on a wicket like that, because you couldn't hit fours on it, basically. Anyway, that's it from me. Thank you to all the super chatters and to everyone else in the chat overall. I see Keshav's in there. AJ said he asked the second part of a question. I missed it. Wait one second. Oh, yeah, Senath and Yuvi would be huge, hugely important. That all-round skill, the flexibility that they give you. Senath is probably a frontline bowler most of the times. Yuvi probably more conditions-based, but certainly in some leagues would be absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, a frontline version of those would be two of the highest-paid players in the world. Big thanks to Harsh and Hypercourse and Rambo and everyone else, and Alex and everyone else who was in the chat as well. Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you.
Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.